Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Spread. I'm here today with someone who has a really cool background that mixes sports and creative, which I feel like is kind of rare. I'm with Alana Kastner, who is SVP of Biz Dev and Athlete Relations at Parity, which is a company that's working to close the gender, income, and opportunity gap in professional sports. And Alana also has a really cool, interesting, diverse background, having worked for a bunch of other big names in sports, the Players Tribune, the NBA, and then also on the creative side at a photography company called Adorama in creative strategy and production. And Alana also was a two-sport collegiate athlete in basketball and track, and had a two-year stint in the pros in women's tackle football. So welcome to the show, Alana.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. Fun fact of this week is that we did a website for a running media company called Sidious Mag, and it's up for a Webby Award against a few of your former employers, against an NBA website and a Players Tribune website. So we're in good company of competitors maybe here.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks. On that note, since I've been paying particular attention to the NBA and Players Tribune right now, and just because the NBA is the NBA, can you tell me what a crazy or exciting moment during your time there was?
It'll be hard to pick just one. I think the cool thing about working at a league and having the opportunity to work on the creative side of that. So at the NBA, I worked on the NBA entertainment side of the organization. So that was all of the original production and programming, which was the department I was in. I think that's where like live events is housed and all of sort of what goes into bringing it to life for the fans. A lot of the projects I worked on were about who the athletes were off of the court, which was really exciting for me. Mm-hmm. And obviously there was always like a story arc of a season or a playoff series or whatnot. But the really cool thing is teams change, players change. The experiences that I had, no one else will ever have again with the set of players that I was interacting with and all of that. A few of my favorite memories, we were creating an episodic series for ESPN in one of my first seasons there in 2008 when the big three, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce all came to the Boston Celtics. And that was sort of one of the first, I guess, super teams to sort of be built in a sense. We spent all season documenting them and each episode had like a vignette on a particular player and their life and their story. But that was a really interesting group of guys to interact with. They were coming together to literally win a championship. It ended up playing out for them as they did. But I remember one of our production shoots was with Glenn Big Baby Davis, and he was holding his daughter for the first time who had just been born. And he basically was having this entire full circle moment for him where he himself hadn't had a very stable father in his life growing up and father figure in his life. And it had been all about him and his mom. And sort of, he was just having this like emotional moment of like how he wanted to be everything for this little girl. And it was, I mean, tears, like one of the most like raw, vulnerable moments Wow. You could imagine. And we got to be there for it. I think it was 2011. We were creating the 1992 Dream Team documentary, which was part of the 30 for 30 series on ESPN. And none of the guys knew where their gold medals were. It was really funny because we like wanted them to bring it all to the shoots. And I'm talking like, this is like David Robinson. This is like the 1992 Dream Team, Karl Malone, like all these guys. So I actually had to fly to Chris Mullin's house in San Francisco from New Jersey to Chris Mullin's house in San Francisco, text him like, hey, Chris, I'm here. He like was like, come inside. He like went into his closet, gave me his gold medal and was like, hey, don't lose it. Cool. Sure. No problem. And then from there, I don't remember which order it was. I either flew to Shreveport, Louisiana, to film with Karl Malone or to San Antonio, Texas to film with David Robinson. I don't remember which one was first. And then we did the other one. And I'm on the plane thinking like, how do I not lose it? So I wore it under my sweatshirt because what if my bag gets stolen? Really crazy things. Got to be in locker rooms with Kobe when he won championships, hugging trophies and crying on the men's side. And then on the women's side, I mean, those were some of my favorite work days because if you think about the early 2000s, the momentum the WNBA has now, it did not have then. And we're talking about some of the biggest names in sports and being with Tamika Catchings as she's trying to get the Indiana Fever to win their first championship. And yesterday, last night, they drafted Caitlin Clark first in the league. And the Detroit Shock were still a team when I was there. And they later became a different organization. But one of my first WNBA finals was Detroit versus San Antonio. Again, two teams that currently don't exist in that state today. And so just watching those teams and those players, Becky Hammon was playing back in the day, just being there with those players as they were able to achieve this thing that they had worked so hard for and seeing the emotion and all of that. And the women were so excited and thrilled to have access and coverage and to be wanting to tell their stories. And it was just such like a wonderful time to be there. And obviously it's only grown from there today, but what I kind of alluded to at the beginning is players come and go, and the things that each individual that works there experiences like changes over time with new faces, new things of that nature. So yeah, it was all really fun.
That's amazing. I'm really glad I asked that question, because having access to being with such big names like that is amazing. I can't really imagine what those moments were like. Super cool. So from there, after the NBA, where did you go after the NBA?
I worked at an organization called Able Cine. They're in the, it's like a camera rental house meets like pre-production organization. I did a lot of like mini agency work, almost some client relations stuff. There I worked with a variety of organizations, helping them manage budgets and creative for projects in the pre-production space. So that was really interesting to me to sort of learn about how it works a little bit on the agency side of things, where you're working with many clients, managing expectations, helping them figure out how to spend their dollars, all of that, which was something I did not have in my 5 seasons across the NBA, WNBA, and all of that.
Right. So you had that. And then later on, you went to Adorama, which is a basically equipment store.
It's an electronic retailer. They have a brick and mortar space in New York City. They were trying to sort of grow their brand awareness domestically and then obviously around the world as well. I had a really cool CMO at the time. He was new as well. And he sort of said to me, I just want to be able to walk into a store in Los Angeles or a meeting and somebody be like, oh, what do you do? Who do you work for? And I can say Adorama and they will have heard of that. They will know what that means. And it was really fun there to work across all of our video and written content. I oversaw the creative strategy for all of the video, and I worked across a lot of the written and social as well. We were making episodic series for YouTube and all of these other places. A lot of it was informational, tutorial things like, hey, how to light for certain portraits. And then a lot of it was, how do we get more and more young people interested in actually pursuing like photo, video, audio as careers or interests? And this was at the same time that Instagram was just becoming big. I sound really old, but...
Oh, no, I remember when Instagram was becoming big.
Everyone suddenly had like a camera in their hand, and it was all about aesthetic and beautiful photos. And it was different than sort of like what people were doing every day with their lives, but more about what they were out there seeing and experiencing and just trying to really garner more young people's interests in playing in that space. And like, how could we get the people that were just on their phones to pick up and want to go buy their first camera and things of that nature, whether it was a film camera or digital. And I worked across a lot of branded content, which was interesting. That was my first foray into like the brand partner space. I did a little bit of that at the NBA, as there were various like initiatives around All-Star Finals and W side as well. But this would be like Sony's coming out with a new camera. We have to make sort of the right content with that, working with the right influencers. The brand has to be on board with it. So like putting together these like branded content campaigns within certain budgets. So that was really exciting. And it was a weird pivot for me. I never thought that would have been a place I would have ended up. I obviously started in the sports space. And then even my second role, I was still working with large clients like Red Bull Media House and NASCAR and NBA and MLB and all these things. And so I still felt like I had a hand a little bit on like what was happening in the world of sport, but an opportunity arose and I took it because I really wanted to learn about how consumers operate. I think that was really interesting for me to sort of learn. I mean, you work in a brand like the NBA, it has its fans, and the WNBA fan base had been growing at that time. And so they wanted to keep people engaged, but the athletes were bringing the, there were already sort of these like things that were bringing fandom. And my time at Adorama was really interesting because I learned about consumer behavior, fan behavior, purchasing behavior, things of that nature, which has helped me in a variety of roles since then, because it's really interesting to think about what the entity wants, what the brand wants, what's the consumer looking for? How do you sort of put all of those together to create the perfect campaign where people will engage and then potentially, hopefully go and take an action and buy something?
And how did you find your way back to sports, to working in sports?
I really missed it. I'm an athlete. I myself, as you said, I really missed being around athletes in the sports space. I pay a lot of attention to sports. I'm a big fan. And I had just been kind of nosing around and I saw an opportunity at the Players Tribune, and I was already a fan of that website. And for those that don't know, it's sort of the media publisher space that Derek Jeter founded when he retired from baseball because he wanted a place for athletes to be able to share their first person stories without the media spitting their words and things of that nature. He was not a big media guy himself. And I had a couple interviews. I got brought on. Originally, I was working on the branded side of things, all different activations there. One of my favorite activations was with Procter & Gamble around the 2018 Winter Olympics. So they had their whole campaign going. It was basically Love Mom, Thank You Mom. And it was sort of this like homage to all the mothers out there that had helped the athletes sort of get to the places that they were. And we took a really interesting spin on that. And so we worked with a handful of Winter Olympians and then also pro women athletes that had children of their own. And these moms wrote these letters to their children, sort of being like, no, thank you. Here's how I see you. Here's how I view you. Here's how proud of you I am. And as they were preparing for the Winter Games, it was great. It won a couple of awards as well. And it was really, really fun, powerful content. That was sort of my first favorite project there. And then I worked on all different types of things. I worked across written and video and some audio. We built a really cool follow documentary featuring Megan Rapinoe and Lindsay Horan leading up to the Women's World Cup in 2019. So we spent a bunch of time with those two and the U.S. Women's National Team leading up to that sort of send-off. It was a little bit of like last hurrah for the older vets and like a kind of like a welcoming and of the new crew. And now obviously Lindsay is the captain of the team and Megan's recently played some of her last games. So it kind of felt like the build up to that. It was like a World Cup. They knew there'd be another Olympics and then they were going to figure out kind of what was on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. 2020 was an incredible year. We were able to put out a lot of really meaningful content after obviously the pandemic, but then everything that happened that summer with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and tons of athletes wanting to share their stories. I had a very, very, very powerful interview and call with Natasha Cloud in early May of 2020. And it was supposed to be about how hyped she was for the W season, like what she was looking forward to. At that time, she'd been with the Mystics for 6 or 7 seasons. She was really making a name for herself. And we just got on the phone and she goes, Alana. And I was like, yep. I was like, I get it. Let's go. Like, what do you want to say? What do you want to talk about? Her piece that she wrote ended up being the first piece that launched our Silence is Not an Option series, which was all about sort of the athletes expressing how they felt about what was had their historical stories and also still what was happening in 2020 and beyond. That was just unacceptable and all of that. The Players Tribune is really interesting for me because I wouldn't say I worked in sports. It was like working with athletes and it's like slightly different. It was like sports adjacent, but I had a great 3.5 years there. And I kind of felt that my time had come at the end of 2020. I feel like I've done here what I've been able to do. And I was ready to sort of figure out how to have an even larger impact. Like personally, that was really important to me. And that's sort of how I found my way to Parity.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me about Parity and the impact you're making there.
Yeah. As you kind of originally outlined, Parity's a sports marketing platform organization focused on closing the income and opportunity gap in women's sports and professional sports for women, I should say. And since inception, I think through our different work, I'm sure the number's higher now, but we've sort of paid out over $3.5 million in through brand partnerships, activations, whatnot to different pro women athletes. I like to say we're sort of for the other 98% of professional women athletes. And that's not a negative connotation at all. It's sort of just like, these are the people that are not the ones that brands are typically thinking of or knocking down the door of and or are aligned with some of the larger agencies who are out there proactively promoting them anyway. Serena Williams, Venus Williams, Simone Biles, Naomi Osaka, Alex Morgan, Sue Bird, like they don't need our help. And what they're already doing for the space is wonderful on their own with their teams. But we're for the 4-time Olympians and 9-time U.S. national champions and just more niche sports or that people just don't maybe know as well that have built these incredible profiles for themselves, are the best in the world or the country at what they do and are really, really powerful to align with from a brand perspective. And they all have really rabid audiences and fan bases who genuinely care about what they're saying, who they talk about, what products they use, things like that. So there was like a really natural opportunity here. Our co-founders actually started the company at the beginning of 2020. It like literally Parity formed in January of 2020. And then obviously the pandemic happened in March, but women's sports was, they were some of the first things back. And it was obviously done in a very strange and isolated way, but soccer came back, basketball came back, and it was on TV. And I actually think that helped the momentum that we're seeing today, because for the first time, people that weren't already women's sports fans and or maybe were on the cusp, but just weren't going to go out and seek it from a accessibility perspective, it was right in front of their faces, right? It was on some of the major broadcast channels and streaming channels, and people were so excited to engage with something that felt even remotely normal and just kind of took off from there. And today, in our current state, we have over 1,000 athletes on our platform that have all signed up on their own. It's free for them to be a part of this. I should state we are a for-profit company. I think sometimes people get confused because we're doing what some might call very like good work, that we must be a not-for-profit, but we see a business opportunity here too, and we're not secretive about that.
Yeah, for-profit doesn't mean bad.
Exactly, exactly. But we've got over 1,000 athletes spanning across 81 sports. It's a big number because it encompasses a lot of the winter and summer Olympic and Paralympic more niche sports that you might not hear about all the time. I think we probably have athletes that are either from or currently live in almost every state in the country. I would say the majority of our athletes are domestically focused, but a lot of them do and or based. A lot of them do spend a lot of time overseas in international competition across various sports. There are some really cool volleyball leagues internationally, softball, obviously basketball, and then individual competitions like track and field stuff happens all over the world. Tennis happens all over the world. I would say the majority of our athletes have predominantly US-based followers, but I would say there's a good amount of global reach as well. And when we first launched, it was a lot about social first activations. People weren't doing things in person. It toes the line of traditional influencer marketing, though I like to say our athletes aren't influencers. They are athletes with influence, because I think that's a really distinctive line to toe. I would say 2021 and 2022 was really social first. And since then, once the world opened up a bit more, it's been a whole slew of everything. Our athletes are in commercials. They're doing keynote speeches. They're doing event appearances. They're creating content. They're doing a lot of athlete-generated content out and about that the brand, it's really turned into more like true brand sponsorships for athletes, where like there might be social posting as a part of it, but that's not the only part of it. And one of my favorite things about the work has just been how to maintain the highest level of creativity for all of the brand work that we're doing. And so I think somebody once said to me, there's no new idea. And while I kind of believe that, because everything is sort of influenced by things that you experience and things you see and all of that, I think part of the work that's really fun that we do is figuring out how to strategically align the right athletes with the right brands for the work. And then what's the most creative way to do the storytelling within that? That's sort of the muscles that are being flexed daily at work, which is really cool.
Yeah. And it sounds like it ties in really nicely to a lot of the work you did previously. At the NBA, we're really focused on telling athlete stories, and later at the Players Tribune. And it sounds like that's the core of what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's sort of like athlete storytelling mixed in with knowing what the brands are looking to solve for and what they want and how they want to reach either their current consumers in a different way or new consumers and things of that nature. So it's really been a nice molding of kind of all of the different things I did before. And honestly, I didn't say this, I ended up at Parity, but I sort of learned about Parity because one of the co-founders, Minji Rowe, her and I met probably in 2007 in a basketball league in New York City. And now it's 13 years later, it's 2020. And she was asking a question on LinkedIn and I had responded and we were like, oh, we should catch up. And we had stayed in touch and seen each other a little bit over the years through different leagues and whatnot. She was the commissioner of one of the leagues that I ended up playing in as well. And we kind of just sat on the phone for like an hour talking. We caught up and she was telling me all about Parity and what they were doing. And I was like, oh, you should do this. And have you thought about this? And should you do this? And then a couple of weeks later, we reconnected and she goes, would you be interested in doing some work with us? It was just one of those moments of like sport and it all kind of just like aligned and worked out really nicely. It came to me at the right time and it's been a really cool 3+ years to see the evolution of it since, watch the athlete community grow, see all the different brand partners be excited and come on board as the momentum has sort of shifted for more people to understand that there's a lot of investment value in women's sports.
Yeah. And it seems like, I mean, over the past few weeks, women's sports has blown up. And I'm saying this in air quotes because of Caitlin Clark. And what's your opinion on that? Do you think it's blown up? Was it always going in this direction? Like, how big has this shift that we've seen just over the past few weeks? And
yeah, I think it was always headed in this direction. But I think somebody like Caitlin has exponentially sped up that process is probably the easiest way to explain that. I mean, I think if you look at like what the US women's national team has been able to do over the last bunch of years, like they've sold out almost every arena they've played in a very large way. If you look at the WNBA attendance records, they're continually growing. Streaming numbers are continuing to go up. And there's sort of this cycle of like, if you make it accessible to fans, they will consume it, whether that's in person or accessibility on streaming and whatnot. But then if the numbers are low, the marketing money isn't being spent. So you have to like keep the cycle going. And anything that disrupts it, it all sort of falls off course. I think the trajectory for women's sports was already happening. I mean, even if we look back to like Serena and Venus, and obviously tennis is a more niche sport, but they were breaking down barriers across. They were the faces of women's sports for a very long time. You have your like basketball stars that have been there along the way, all the way back to like Cynthia Cooper, Cheryl Swoops, Lisa Leslie. I mean, these are household names that people know. And then you have your Sues and Dianas, and the trajectory has been happening. But then you have somebody generational like Caitlin Clark, who's show-stopping, selling out arenas. I mean, I live in New Jersey, just outside New York City. And so even when the Iowa women's team came to play at Rutgers early this year, one of my friends actually who works at the WNBA asked me if I wanted to go with her. And we went to that game. And that arena was filled with 85% yellow and gold of young kids cheering for Caitlin Clark. This is young boys, young girls. It was wild to see. I think that, I mean, Caitlin says it herself all the time. And I think she's right. There's been plenty of people that have come before her that have set her up for success in a way where like the stage was kind of set and she stepped right into the limelight in a great way. I mean, you've got South Carolina's team going undefeated this year and two rookies, two freshmen having incredible final games. There's so much momentum. I also saw something on social media the other day, and I don't remember who said it. So apologies if whoever said it hears this. This is not my quote, but I think Caitlin Clark, if I'm not correct, or maybe it's this year's college freshmen. Basically, the WNBA has been around now since 1997. So this first group of like 20-year-olds, like they grew up thinking they could be pro women basketball players. I wanted to be Michael Jordan. I didn't have a choice. I was 12 when the WNBA started and I was hyped, but I was not that little kid. Like, I can be her. This generation, like Caitlin's group, they all saw that. They saw the players from 20 years ago. They knew that this was an option for them. And I think that's super cool. And I think that's only helping. That's only helping the trajectory of greatness, like stepping into the league. And the talent's just going to keep getting better and better and better and better and better. So I'm wildly excited to see what happens.
Yeah, totally. I just got chills listening to you say that because I also grew up loving Michael Jordan. I'm from Chicago and Yeah, I was a huge Bulls fan. I was also a huge women's soccer fan. The 99 World Cup was a massive moment for me. Mia Hamm was an idol. And I got to meet Brandi Chastain a couple of years ago. And I was just like, my 10-year-old self would be freaking out right now. But yeah.
And think about how few moments you had to actually watch them. So you could probably watch every Bulls game. And maybe you saw three soccer games on TV over the course of a year, right? Or something like that. I think the difference is now every time the She Believes Cup, every game is streaming somewhere. You can watch some of the U.S. players that are even playing internationally now because of streaming and all that stuff. And so it's, as much as I think social media is the devil in a lot of ways, it's done a lot for helping these athletes get more visibility and helping fans get direct access to them in ways that they wouldn't otherwise. And that's really just helping the trajectory continue to grow.
Yeah, totally. And on that note, you had kind of mentioned how the Players Tribune started as allow athletes to tell their stories outside of sports. And that's kind of a big part of social media as well, is a place for them to tell their own stories. I'm curious how that plays into the work done at Parity. Do you have an example of a brand partnership that was really compelling?
I'll say this much. Microsoft's been one of our best partners and year over year since like early 2021, when we went to actually were like, okay, we're ready to like work with brands now. And the first activation that we did with Microsoft was around athletes and their mental health and sort of giving athletes a space to talk about their own journeys with their own mental health as it relates to being a pro woman athlete in America in 2021. That's the perfect example of a brand. They were working on a mental health panel with a musician. They were excited for the athletes to kind of like promote the panel. And again, I'm using air quotes because it wasn't really about them promoting the panel. It was about them talking about sharing their own stories with their fans about mental health and sort of their own journeys and what that looked like for them. And the brand sentiment and the sentiment around that campaign was one of my favorites still to this date, because the number of people that were like, so glad to know what someone else feels this way. Like, I experiencing the same thing in my own life. Just like the amount of empathy that was kind of going around this whole campaign was wonderful to see. And that was the perfect moment where, isn't it super cool that an athlete will get paid to actually talk about something that they'd would talk about anyway and is really important to them, but in like a great way for this all to come together. It felt like a really, really cool moment to kick off with one of our like largest partners and whatnot. And we also had some campaigns early on with a couple of brands that were focused on like athletes as parents and moms and just accessibility. So even Thule, I don't know if you're familiar with Thule, they make like car rig racks, like storage racks. They make a lot of running strollers and things that are, again, an activation sort of loosely. And this is where the creativity comes in. They were talking about promoting a new colorway of a running stroller they had. Fine, totally fair from a brand side of, as to why they wanted to align with these pro women athletes. But what was really exciting is they weren't looking for the athletes to push their products. They were just looking for like authentic product integration into their everyday lives. So here are athletes talking about how they have to go to the gym in the morning, and do they live close enough to walk there? They're putting their kid in their stroller. They're going, like, then what's next? Like going to the grocery store to pick up some things. Then they might have to go to work because they don't necessarily make enough in sport to not also do some level of work. And so it was just more about them being multidimensional and how, and they didn't really even talk about the stroller necessarily. It was truly like about them in their everyday lives. And yes, the stroller was featured in the content and there were some photos and or video, but it wasn't like, hey, use this product, here's my code. It was, hey, I'm a pro woman athlete. And for me, that means I have three jobs. I have two kids. I'm super busy. I'm in charge, you know, I'm responsible for all of this stuff. And this is just something that can help me make my day a slightly more efficient, or here's why. Stuff like that is really fun to take what the brand is looking to solve for and really align it with the stories the athletes are excited to tell about their lives.
Yeah. And those are the most compelling. I really think people can feel it if something's inauthentic.
Yeah.
And for athletes who are moms, they're going to know that life is insane and that those stories are real. I'm curious how your experience working with super famous, super high paid NBA athletes telling their stories, and then women who are often working multiple jobs. Maybe they're doing things like postponing having kids, or like weighing the decision between like retiring to have kids and doing another season or things like this. It's just a very different atmosphere that women and men are still in. I'm just curious, like, if there's things you've noticed that have come up in any regard, like things that have been particularly noteworthy to you.
Yeah. I think when I was in it 15, 16 years ago at the league, and this was even across the men's basketball and women's basketball, the men were always really nice and they were friendly. They were nice, but they weren't going above and beyond. They weren't necessarily like, they were sort of there to check boxes because they had to, because somebody at their team level told them they had to. On the women's side, they were like, I've been here in this interview chair for 15 minutes. You said the interview was 15 minutes. I'm done. On the women's side, it was like sometimes we'd have 30 minutes scheduled and we'd still be talking an hour later because there was more they wanted to share and they wanted to say. And there's just this level of accessibility. And I'm talking this even with the top women. Like I'm talking about Deanna Taurasi. I'm talking about Sue Bird. I'm talking about Tamika Catchings. But I'm talking about some of the bigger names in women's sports. They were excited to be there, excited to tell their story, excited to have the opportunity. They loved engaging with the fans, whether it was autographs or whatnot. I think the thing that I've realized today is like every single one of the athletes, and our athletes span, like we have W athletes, we have NWSL athletes, like they're in our world. Like it's not like we're just playing in the niche sports space. Every athlete has a really cool story to tell that's unique to them and they're excited to engage with it. And people don't follow, like Kara Winger, she's one of my favorite examples. She used to work for Parity. She's a four-time Olympian. She was the Team USA closing ceremony flag bearer at Tokyo, which she got voted by the Team USA athletes. She's the American record holder in javelin. She was number one in the world most of last year before she sort of put her cleats and spikes down and whatnot. But she's got 20,000 Instagram followers. That's not a big social presence. It's bigger than my 600 on my private page where I mostly show pictures of my kid. But she takes time to engage with them. People engage with her. She engages with them. These are real fans. These are people that she's met along the way at javelin competitions. These are people that are just like young, up-and-coming athletes in middle school and high school that want to be like her. These are people that she's met through different worlds. And she's engaging with them constantly. Like I've watched her navigate her social. I've watched her on site at events. Like after she throws for an hour, she's got a line of people waiting to talk to her. And she spends time with every single one of them. These women, I don't know why, and maybe it's because they just feel grateful that they have the experiences and that the fans are there and they care, but they want to connect with the communities of people that are there for them and supporting them and that have been there along the way. And it's just wild to see. I mean, and in person, these women are just, they're ready to give it all. And I don't know if it's just a testament to like women in general or what, but it's just been really cool to see how they're sort of not beholden to the old school, I'm here just to wave and then I'm leaving. I'm here for 10 minutes and then I'm out. Like they'll spend all day. They'll bring their medals. They'll put it on kids to take pictures. They love inspiring the next generations. They didn't have role models in sport necessarily who were pro women athletes, and they want to be that. And they're excited about being that for the next generation. And I think it really plays out in their content and their creativity and how they show up every day. And it's just really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super cool. And I've heard the same thing from others who've been on this podcast. Yeah, it's cool. There's something special about women's sports. And maybe it's all those things you mentioned. Maybe it's something else. I think The mental health note is interesting. Butter Studio did a project in early 2020 when all of our work was canceled. This is an editorial project, self-directed. It wasn't for a client. And we interviewed 10 female Olympic athletes about their experience with the Olympics being postponed. And it was such a cool experience to interview these women and the vulnerability that came out and really sharing about mental health struggles and tools they use to combat anxiety and all of these things was so cool. And it was so amazing to hear from these like essentially superhumans in my mind, like with these superpowers, how they have similar struggles to all of us. And they're not shy about sharing it. And we've seen that the leadership coming out of women's sports, like Simone Biles, really being vulnerable publicly.
Yeah, I think Simone and Naomi, both in their own sports and in their own ways, were super publicly vulnerable about their mental health. The Olympics and Paralympics are one of those. It's wild for the athletes that have to like plan 4 years up to the point and what that takes to get to their best moment to peak when they're supposed to with their training and temp. And then that thing, which they basically sacrificed so much in getting there, gets moved. It's unfathomable to me. And then you have the athletes that spend a lot of their seasons overseas and they're isolated and they're by themselves, but they want to be able to be the best that they can at their sport or earn more money. And it's just every athlete's story around mental health is, again, really interesting. There's a lot of similar themes, but everyone has their own unique experience. And then to your point, how they get through those, who they rely on. We've done some like athlete resource group type of work where we've sort of like around common themes brought groups of athletes together that were interested, just knowing that there's like a community of other people out there that they can share with about that. Injury recovery was one of them. Mental health was another one, just because sometimes people just need someone to talk to that they know is experiencing the same thing, and then they can help each other through it. You're right. The point is being vulnerable and it talking about it in the first place. So other people might know that they can connect with you about that or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. What is happening at Parity now that you're excited about? Are you guys doing something?
Oh, yeah, we've got a lot
in the Olympics or?
Yeah, we've got a lot in the works. We have 134 athletes going for Paris across the Olympics and Paralympics games, which is exciting. Over the next couple of weeks and months, we'll know more about who's actually qualified and who hasn't and all of that. This is obviously a very tumultuous time. So we have some interesting partnerships that we're about to announce. We're working with The Gist. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, Gist Sports, in a more formal way. And that, I think, press release comes out next week just to help them, just as more ways to get women athletes involved in different brand partnerships and sponsorships. So that's cool. We're working on a pretty robust fan survey. I think the biggest of its kind done around women's sports in the world. I believe all of that will be coming out early May. I want to say May 8th. I'll get back to you on the specific date there. And that's in partnership with SurveyMonkey, which is really cool. So like a big entity was excited to work with us on a women's sports fan survey. So I think we'll have some really interesting like data and findings from that, which will only help further brands' understanding of what the consumers are looking for around women's sports, which will be super cool. Yeah, we've got a lot of fun stuff in the works. We've got a couple of different like summits that we're going to be at, places that we're showing up, events that we're putting on. So yeah, it's going to be a busy spring and summer. Excited that for NWSL just kicked back off again. We're excited for the beginning of the W season and whatnot. So yeah, there's a lot. And then of course, this summer will be all about the Olympics and Paralympics, yeah, which is super cool. Yeah. Emma Sheik, who works for us, she's an athlete ambassador on the revenue sales side of things. She's going for her second Paralympics in sitting volleyball. So that's really fun because she's down at training camp right now in Oklahoma City while she's working full time for us, which is wild. Carly Samuelson is on my team. She just won MVP of the Euro Cup over in London for the London Lions for women's basketball. She also signed a 2-year guaranteed contract with the Washington Mystics. So she'll be in DC in about 10 or 12 days to start training camp there. That's one of the most fun things about working at Parity as well, is like we hire athletes, and Elizabeth Montavon on my team, 9-time U.S. national champion in water skiing. I think she's currently ranked like 4th in the world or something. So that's really cool. Lindsay McCone is an Athletes Unlimited pro lacrosse player, and she's been part of AU basically since it started on the lacrosse side of things. So it's been really fun to, I think, well, that's sort of our special sauce, is like our institutional knowledge of the sports space, whether it's my background or other people's background on the team. And then also we have athletes that are working with us. It's a little bit of putting our money where our mouth is, but it also helps us every day do our best work in this space, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And also I'm curious to hear how you've seen it impact the business, because I think there's statistics about this, about how if you played sports, you're more likely to succeed in business, and what percentage of CEOs used to play sports.
Yeah, it's been great. My favorite people to work with are athletes. And obviously I was an athlete myself, but when you come into a room and everyone on their team has a role, it's like literally being on a sports team, right?
Yeah,
like
totally.
At a high level sports team where people are not mad about playing time, they're all just there to win. And they all know that if they do their specific things to the best of their ability, it uplifts everyone. That's literally what work is. And athletes that have just been around sports their whole lives, like they show up every day wanting to do their best work because they don't necessarily know how to slack or how to not perform to their best. I'll say this much. Sometimes I have to remind people they need to take vacation, things of that nature. Like it's funny, but it's really helped us from a business perspective. And you get a brand on the phone. They're happy to already be talking to an athlete. Sometimes we have athletes join calls, things of that nature, people on the team, just because it's fun. Like you see a brand's executives' eyes light up knowing they're on the phone with a four-time Olympian, knowing they're on the phone with an athlete that's trying to get to Paris for the Paralympics. They're excited. And even if it wasn't somebody they heard of before, they're thrilled to just get to engage with them immediately. And so that's been really cool too.
That is cool. That actually surprises me because I don't know, I have this idea of brands being so numbers focused, and if they haven't heard of this athlete, maybe they wouldn't care, or they'd be like, get me the CEO or something. Or
yeah, it's been interesting. It's been good to see the, how that's helped move the needle a bit.
Yeah, that is cool. I don't know how anybody couldn't get excited, because I just think Olympians are really the Grecian version of it, really like superhumans. To be able to have that talent and that dedication is really special. Kind of on that note, I'd be curious to hear if you've had challenges getting C-suites from big brands to invest in women athletes.
Yes. I think the hardest part is, and sometimes it's my least favorite part, is having to explain the value over and over when it's like so apparent to myself and I sometimes and my team. And I'm like, why doesn't everyone just see this? Even when the numbers align, I think because a lot of people are new to the space. They're sort of figuring out like, what does that mean? How do they get involved? And where will they as an organization find value? And sort of having to explain that over and over, it sometimes can be challenging. I would also say that when there's an internal champion or somebody that already cares or somebody that was an athlete, like a higher up woman executive that was an athlete themselves, the conversations move a little faster. We've seen a lot of good momentum from probably some of the younger men who have daughters and who are sort of like all in now that their young daughters want to play sports, like the whole girl dad thing. And I find that wildly infuriating, but also great for business because I'm glad that they care and now want to spend dollars in this space. And if it helps their daughters in the future, great. It's infuriating that it took until now for there to be buy-in on that side of things. And that's sometimes a challenge. I think the other thing is a lot of brands now are like, oh, we should be working in women's sports, but they haven't allocated money for it. It wasn't built into their marketing plans. They're trying to figure out where to start. And we can be super additive. Like Parity is a great resource for that. We have all of the abilities and skill sets to be able to help plan for the now or the future for some of these organizations. It's the same as a taking any new marketing leap. Like you got to try it and see how it lands and then figure out how you want to double down on something. The cool part is women's sports is very affordable to get in on. And I think people don't realize that, like across athletes. And I don't mean people are not making as much as they should. I mean, it's just starting at a lower entry point right now than men's sports. There's a lot more accessibility. You can build a diverse portfolio of whether you're working with athletes or teams or leagues or orgs or entity, whatever it could be. You could have like a whole little robust plan and then you'd be able to reap the benefits of that over the long run. So I will say this much. Nobody has solved over the history of advertising as a whole. There's never been somebody that solved sort of the ROI attribution model. Even back in the day, Gatorade didn't put a Serena Williams ad in a magazine, like on the back cover of People magazine, and then know that there was no way they could attribute that to more sales totally. Of Gatorade in the local grocery stores. I think we're still seeing that model sort of exhausted in terms of brands are like, well, how can I know that if I do this, this will happen? I'm like, there's like a halo effect to how all of this works, how consumers operate. I've read some stats, but I think people need to be exposed to something like 5 to 7 times before they're ready to make a purchase. And that's not from the same person. That's across the entire 360 picture of how they might be marketed something. So there are a way for women's sports to fit into that really nicely as well, especially because there's a lot of overlap in women's sports fandom, but then there's also a lot of more niche markets. So depending on which methodology you're into, you could hit the same audience in multiple different ways, where a lot of NWSL fans might also be WNBA fans, but then those fans might not be fans of X, Y, and Z over here, like women's rugby or lacrosse, for example. So there's a lot of ways to be creative about how you reach people too, which I think is kind of the fun of this whole, every day is like a little bit of a kind of just like puzzle solving, really, mm-hmm. which is fun.
Mm-hmm, totally. I love a good puzzle. What would you say that you're still working on as a business leader?
Ooh, personally, not getting frustrated when people don't just get it. I think, and probably because I work in a space I care so much about, for me, it really is have empathy for where brands are coming from and their own experiences walking into some of these conversations. And I should just be excited that they want to be there and having them, as opposed to sometimes I get frustrated that we'll have like a bunch of calls and at the end, the brand will be like, you know what, like maybe next year, where they're not ready to sort of. I do think that all of those moments of connectivity and exposure will help them actually make that final decision in the long run. And it might not mm-hmm. be now. And if it's in six Definitely. Months or a year, like cool, but at least we've sort of built the foundation for that. And I think I just need to remember that more and help other people at our organization and my team remember that more. Because when you are athletes and you care and brands say no or don't get it, that can be a little bit defeating, and sort of just staying positive through this and understanding that the brands are solving for their own internal things as well. And we are just a piece of the larger picture and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That resonates with me a lot. I've experienced that in my field. I often meet someone, make a connection, and then a year later, they come back and they have a project. And it's like,
that's a long sales cycle.
It can be, it for sure can be, but it's similar. It's like some people don't really understand the value of creative or branding, and can be a similar educational process for me to educate on what value it creates. And then some people are in and get it and are ready to go. And then others, it takes a year and then they want to do it next year or whatever. Well, this conversation has been super fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was great.
Yeah, thank you. Your experience is so cool and it was so fun learning about it. I always like to end with the same question, which is, what are three of your other favorite organizations that span the world of sports and creativity?
Whew, that's tough. There's a lot out there now. I should have prepared for this. Three other organizations. I'll start with Goals Sports. I don't know if you're familiar with Caroline Fitzgerald, who runs Goals Sports out of Pittsburgh. She also has a podcast more focused on the business case for women's sports, but she's been doing really creative work with us at Parity as well as like a contributor. She's a major thought leader in the space. Her content on social is really cool. And so I think sort of the conversations that she is positioning Goals in has been really interesting and really unique and creative. And that's been fun. I think what Together has built is really interesting. Obviously, fans of the work they're doing, former players, Tribune people, kind of at the helm of bringing that to life as well. It's a really cool way to sort of like get the younger, more Gen Z crew involved in a fun and exciting way. And it's like they talk about sports, but not necessarily about stats and highlights and more just about the sphere around it, which I think is really fun in really creative ways. And they do super cool brand activations as well. A lot of them like on-site at larger events or just like in different branded pieces and things of that nature. So that's cool work. And then a third, there's so much going on out there. It's hard to say. I don't know if you're familiar with Made for the W. It's a social media account that originally started as WNBA Kicks back in the day, but then the WNBA was like, no, you can't call yourselves that. And it's fine. I mean, for whatever reason. But I know Mel, one of the co-founders, pretty well. And I've not met the other woman that is the other co-founder of her org. But they've sort of pivoted what Made for the W has been. And they're like a social first content sort of, but they also do like creative and production and all of that. And the way Together has like distribution, they don't necessarily have distribution, but they do a lot of cool projects for people in the space. And they're very much like in the know right now with what people think is cool and culturally relevant and up and coming. And so the content's really, really creative that they work on. And it's been super cool to see them evolve and grow.
Cool. I'm excited to check these out. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
Looking forward to seeing what Parity is up to this summer with the Olympics. And if you're in Paris, I'll probably go for some of it since I'm in Berlin.
So now I'll have to pitch going to Paris. So
yeah, pitch going to Paris.
I've already set up one meeting. Look, perfect.
Yeah, there we go. Perfect.
All right.
All right. Thanks so much, Alana.
All right. Thank you.